Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 9:10 a.m. on Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. Present today, we've got Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Stapp, Co-Chair Johnson, Representative Cronick, Representative Ortiz, Representative Cologne, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And before we start, just a reminder, folks can mute their cell phones. This morning, we have two bills before the committee. First, we'll take up House Bill 126, which is licensing of associate professional counselors. There were no amendments. We will review the fiscal notes, and if it's the will of the committee, we'll go ahead and move the bill out of finance. And after that, we have House Bill 115, which is licensing and practices for naturopaths. This is the first hearing for this bill in House Finance, and so we'll introduce the bill, hear from the sponsor, and then set the bill aside. Also, we had a third bill up today, and that was HB 111, which is education for deaf and hearing impaired. My understanding is the sponsor is working with the departments of education, I believe, to possibly remove the fiscal note, which I believe was a $6,000 fiscal note. So at this time, we've removed it from today's agenda, not to say that it couldn't possibly come up later. So first up, we've got House Bill 126, licensing of associate and professional counselors. We do have four fiscal notes for the bill. First, we've got Renee Gayhart, Director, Division of Healthcare Services, as well as Tracy Dompling, Director, Division of Behavioral Health from the Department of Health, to walk us through three of the fiscal notes. So with that, Director Gayhart and Director Dompling, if you could please come up to the table, put yourselves on the record, and walk us through the fiscal notes.
Good morning. For the record, Renee Gayhart, Director of Healthcare Services. The Department of Health does have three fiscal notes. I'll go over two, the Medicaid component and healthcare services, and then I'll hand it over to Director Dompling for behavioral health. So as you take a look at the fiscal note, you see that it's a zero fiscal note. I just want to point out that there is no revenue change or a cost to the department. We intend to absorb the cost in two different areas. The Medicaid component, which is... for you, component number 3234. As we look at this, the associate professional counselors that will be coming on board are already included, or we believe they're included in the budget that's been submitted. So it's a zero fiscal note there. With healthcare services, component 242. We'll definitely see an uptick in the enrollment, so we will have additional work for our quality assurance unit. They do the enrollment, the post-payment reviews, and there'll be limited systems configuration, but again, the division is absorbing this, so there'll be a zero fiscal note.
Okay, we've got a question, Representative Stapp. And Representative Ortiz, Representative Staff.
Thank Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, this might be Director Gayhart, but it might actually be to our operating budget co-chair. So given the fact that the positions required to fulfill the, you know, extra duties that healthcare services will have to do in the event that this bill passes are in the budget, do we need language in the budget referencing that? Or do we need something in the bill referencing that? Because in theory, there would be a fiscal note for those positions. There's not a fiscal note for those positions because the positions are in the FY25 government. So
we can make multiple stabs at this if needed. We can first, I don't know, Representative Co-Chair Johnson, and then we can also try the department. Representative Johnson?
So since this is a fiscal note, it's not part of the operating budget. So I guess what I'm saying is, even though it's not referenced in a fiscal note, I don't see how you put it in the budget when it's really part of the fiscal note, even though it's a zero amount, if that makes any sense. But I will take a look at that with my staff. I don't know that we might do that when we integrate all the fiscal notes at the end, that might be a good note to have made for our final adjustments.
Okay. Do you have any comments on that from the department?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, staff, and Foster, we contemplate that it's already in the budget. It's included with the existing staffing pattern that is in 24 and will go forward in 25.
Okay. Representative Ortiz.
No, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. My questions are along the lines of Representative Staff, so thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Representative Hammond.
Thank you. Mine's going to diverge a little bit through Chair Foster. Ms. Gayhart, will this, if passed, allow more Alaskans to get coverage for mental health counseling, and will those services be Medicaid reimbursable once this licensure is in place?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, yes, it will definitely increase the service capacity for mental health services, and we will cover it through Medicaid.
Great, thank you.
Okay, and if we could move to the next fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, this is Tracy Dompling. I'm the director for the Division of Behavioral Health. I'm speaking to fiscal note number 2665. As Ms. Gayhart already said, no revenue change or cost to the department. The Division of Behavioral Health is involved with enrollment of individuals who are 1115 providers. We will also be utilizing existing staff that are in our budget to perform whatever additional requirements may be needed to bring those new associate professional counselors on board.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the committee? Okay, seeing none, if we can move to the next. And we've got from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, got the fiscal note for the Corporation's Business and Professional Licensing Division. We've got Sylvan Robb, and if you could please put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. For the record, Sylvan Robb, Director of the Division of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing at the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. This is the fiscal note for OMB component number 2360. This is the only fiscal note that actually has funding on it. So you'll see in our fiscal note a request in FY25 for $131,000. That is the need for an additional occupational licensing examiner to handle the licensing of these new associate counselors that we'll be adding, as well as the addition. So in FY25, the only cost that does not continue into the out years is $290,000. $2,900, that's a lot more reasonable, for a regulations project, and the rest of the costs that continue in the out years are all related to the addition of that position. You will see that there's a change in revenue. That's because the fund source for the position is 1156, which is Receipt Supported Services, that's DGF, and so we are required through statute to have our licensing fees cover the cost of operations for professional licensing.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions from the committee? I don't see any questions. Oh, we do have a question, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, through the chair. What I'm not seeing is how many of the, I guess we're calling them junior counselors, or the counselors who are not yet full counselors. This one position is overseeing all of them. Is that what I'm hearing right? That they are keeping track of hours and things like that? And how many would it be that one person is keeping track of? Do you have a sense of that?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Galvin. So this position will be added to the staff that currently license professional counselors. And so that team will license both the professional counselors and the associate professional counselors that are being added. Because we don't license those individuals now, we don't have an accurate estimate of how many of them there are. There are 993 professional counselors in FY23, and then we have 577 board-approved supervisors who are overseeing the associate, or the folks that will become the licensed associate counselors now.
a follow-up?
Hello?
So we're assuming that it's in the hundreds, right? If there's 597 supervisor counselors, then the associate counselors would likely be in the hundreds, yes?
Through the chair to Representative Galvin, again, we don't have a count of how many of those individuals there are now.
Okay.
So in each board-approved supervisor may supervise more than one person, or they may be supervising no one at the moment. So we just don't have a great estimate of how many of those folks there are.
So you have some degree of confidence, though, that this one position will be enough at this time as you get started.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, yes.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Okay, seeing no further questions, appreciate it. This might be a little bit backwards, but I think it's just good for public process and making sure that the public understands kind of what's before us. And so maybe if I could ask the sponsor of the bill, Representative Wright, as well as his staff, Rachel Gunn, just maybe give a quick 30-second or more summary of the bill. Just to kind of refresh everyone's memories and also just if the committee has any questions of the sponsor, Representative Wright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the record. I'm Representative Stanley Wright. I do have my legislative staff here, Ms. Rachel Gunn, who will do a brief overview.
Thank you. Through the chair, for the record, I am Rachel Gunn, staff to Representative Wright. What this bill does is it creates a tier designation within the counseling profession in Alaska. So after people complete their postgraduate studies with their graduate degree, and before they enter the full licensure, they're on a pathway. This bill offers them a little bit more support and guidance along that pathway, as well as support to the supervisors who are supervising them. And if I may answer Representative Gallivan's question, heard anecdotally last time in public testimony, we have a local therapist here in Juneau, Piper Thallon, who has 4 interns at the moment. So we're seeing anywhere from 1 to more than a handful.
Great. Thank you so very much. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. Just as a reminder, prior to this, if this bill passes, and probably likely will, how does a current graduate from a program, from a counseling program, get licensed? In other words, what is required right now under the status quo to get full licensure?
Thank you, through the chair, to Representative Ortiz. So there are federal guidelines in the counseling profession that involves 3,000 hours of training, and you have to pass a national exam and other rigorous standards.
Mm-hmm.
What we're doing with this bill is the interns right now, the counseling interns that you speak of, we're giving them a licensure so that they can report their hours more often. The supervisors can kind of keep everything together. And what we want to do with this bill is make sure that everybody that graduates with a post-secondary degree in behavioral health has the opportunity to become a licensed professional counselor.
Follow up?
So the bill is intended then to streamline the process of them being able to get full licensure. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes, sir. Representative Ortiz, and it also has the additional benefit of offering these billable hours, as we heard from the folks from the Department of Health. Right now, the counseling interns cannot bill many insurances. They cannot bill Medicaid. So what we're seeing is supervisors that are overloaded with clients, and they only have a few billable self-pay patients, really, to share between here in Juneau, Piper, the counselor. She's got 4, and she only has 4 interns and only 2 billable self-pay clients to share amongst those interns. Sorry.
Hello?
That's good enough. Thank you.
Okay. Well, appreciate the summary, and I don't see any further questions. And so with that, I would entertain a motion. Co-Chair Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Foster. I move House Bill 126-33-LS-0405/S from the House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Okay, seeing no objection, House Bill 126, which is 33-LS-0405/S, moves from the House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. I'll take a brief at ease. We'll have the sheet passed out, have folks sign that, and appreciate you coming for us, Representative Wright and Ms. Stanley Gunn. So, brief at ease. Okay, and House Finance back on record at 9:26 a.m. Next up, we have House Bill 115, which is licensing and practices for naturopaths. I'd like to ask Representative Brax, as well as his staff, Mr. Riley Nye, to please come to the table, put yourselves on the record, and begin your presentation. And also available online for questions are naturopathic Dr. Scott Looper with White Spruce Medical in Fairbanks, as well as naturopathic Dr. Tim Birdsell with Avante Medical Center in Anchorage. And let me just double check to see if there's anyone else online here. Looks like that's it. I think Sylvan Robb is going to stick around just in case there are any questions for the Department of Commerce, professional licensing. And so with that, Representative Prax, if you could please put yourself on the record.
Okay, thank you. For the record, this is Representative Mike Prox. I represent House District 33. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster and Finance Committee members, for this opportunity to present House Bill 115, which relates to the practice of naturopathy in Alaska. I just want to give a brief history to, it kind of explains the need for this bill. So, advances in pharmaceutical research accompanied by government licensing of pharmaceuticals and medical practice has caused the American medical industry to evolve towards fighting disease as opposed to maintaining health. But a renewed interest in maintaining health to avoid the need to fight disease started to take hold in the late 50s as stories of serious side effects from modern pharmaceuticals began to emerge. Medical schools focused on training their students to understand how our bodies naturally respond to disease and how to maintain that healthy response grew in response to this renewed interest. As schools of naturopathy grew, nationally recognized accrediting standards comparable to other schools were established. This led states to issue licenses specific to practicing naturopathic medicine. The Alaska legislature first recognized the practice of naturopathic medicine as a licensed profession in 1986, but it did not allow naturopaths to give, prescribe, or recommend prescription drugs, controlled substances, or poisons, or to engage in surgery. Naturopaths need to understand pharmacology so they are able to recognize when prescribing drugs might benefit their patients, and especially to recognize when their patients might be suffering from the adverse effects of drugs previously prescribed to them. So accredited schools of naturopathy provide the same pharmacological education as other medical schools. So recognizing that naturopaths receive the same level of pharmaceutical education as other practitioners, other states trust naturopaths to use their best judgment when prescribing drugs, just as they trust other medical practitioners to use their best judgment when prescribing drugs. Similarly, other states recognize that naturopaths receive the same surgical training as general practitioners, so they know what surgical procedures they can perform and what is beyond their capability. So other states allow naturopaths to perform surgeries according to their best judgment. Consequently, naturopaths are discouraged from opening a practice in Alaska because they're restricted from practicing to the level that they're trained. Furthermore, Alaskans who could obtain a prescription or a surgical procedure directly from their naturopath in other states must pay for an additional office visit to obtain a prescription or a surgical procedure that their Alaska licensed naturopath could provide or perform were it not for Alaska's overly restrictive licensing statutes. This causes Alaskans to pay more than necessary for medical care and exacerbates Alaska's shortage of primary care practitioners. HB 115 is intended to align Alaska's professional licensing standards with nationally accredited naturopathic medical schools' doctoral degree standards. Passing 115 will allow licensed naturopathic doctors to serve Alaskans to the full extent of their training. Allowing naturopaths to practice to the full extent of their training will encourage more naturopathic doctors to practice in Alaska. Having more naturopaths practicing in Alaska will alleviate Alaska's primary shortage of primary care professionals. And alleviating our shortage of primary care professionals will improve public health. So now I'd like next for my staffer, Riley Nye, to kind of go through the bill itself and the section.
Thank you. Mr. Nye, if you could put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. For the record, my name is Riley Nye, staff to Representative Prax, and thank you for hearing House Bill 115, Naturopath Licensing, today. With the co-chair's permission, I'll go through the presentation here and then go through a shortened sectional, or if you prefer, I could go through the whole sectional.
Okay, maybe we'll go through the presentation first, and then we'll see if we look like we're understanding everything.
Please proceed. So what is a naturopathic doctor? A naturopathic doctor is a primary care provider with a four-year postgraduate medical degree who practices evidence-based primary care with a patient-centered focus. They prioritize disease prevention and discovering root causes of illness. They also have treatments that focus on lifestyle modifications, nutrition, and low-risk intervention. As far as their education goes, they have a four-year medical school program that is accredited by the Council of Naturopathic Medical Education. They also have 2 years of medical sciences, including anatomy, physiology, microbiology, and immunology, etc. The prerequisites are a four-year undergraduate degree and additional pre-med coursework. They have a 1 to 3 year optional residency that's available. There's a nationwide shortage. As far as licensing goes, naturopaths must pass the two-part naturopathic physician's licensing examination, NPLEX, before being licensed to practice. And we're going to skip over who is not a naturopathic doctor. And this here shows the states in America where they're licensed and where they're not licensed, not regulated. So the green states show where they are licensed by the department in the state, and these states show where they're not regulated, not licensed. There are 23 states here that are licensed by departments. This here shows what states have prescriptive authority. These green states here, these show where they have prescriptive authority, and this state here, they're licensed and they have prescriptive authority. The green, the light green here, this shows where they have prescriptive authority, but they have a collaborative agreement in California. So they have a certain number of prescriptions or a year's time, and then they're able to prescribe without further collaboration. The yellow states here, these show where they're licensed, but they don't have prescriptive authority, like as in Alaska. And once again, the gray shows where they're not regulated, not licensed by the department. And this slide here shows where naturopaths are licensed. And in the dark green, that's where they are able to prescribe controlled substances. These light green states are where they have prescriptive authority but are not able to prescribe controlled substances. And the yellow states are where they are licensed but are not able to prescribe. And once again, the gray shows where they're not regulated, not licensed by the department. This bill modernizes statutes for naturopaths, it cleans up outdated language, imposes the same public health duties on naturopaths as other medical providers. It updates the scope of practice for naturopaths that includes limited prescriptive authority and also allows minor office procedures. And under this bill, there would be no more duplicative office visits where somebody has to then go to, they first see a naturopath, and then they have to go see a medical doctor for a prescription. They will have improved access to care for all Alaskans, and there's more choices for our patients. And that concludes the presentation. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Let's see. Just want to make sure I've got this correct in the sponsor statements. On the third paragraph down, it says HB 115 sets clear statutory guidelines to allow licensed naturopaths to perform minor office procedures and to prescribe non-controlled medications. And then in the presentation, under the scope of practice by the state controlled substances, it does say that we are not a state that allows for naturopaths to prescribe controlled substances. And then on the last page, which is page 8, it says update scope of practice for naturopaths that include limited prescriptive authority. I just want to double check. It looks like it's the bill would not allow for prescribing controlled substances, opioids, and just wanted to, I guess, maybe clearly put that on the record. Representative Prox?
Right. Thank you, Chair Foster. That is correct. There's a difference between prescription drugs and controlled substances, and basically the controlled substances are considered by the federal government to not have sufficient medical value to justify the risk of them being circulated.
Thank you. Further questions, Representative Josephson and Ortiz?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Prox, I have a number of concerns with the bill. Let me start in no particular order and ask you about the requirement for postgraduate. Well, first of all, actually, let me retract. In the presentation, I think there was reference to Section 6, but perhaps I misheard what was said. And so if I go to Section 6, I'm trying to think the statement that was said that that I'm not sure is accurate. As I see it here, a person can, without a license, or rather without having passed an examination, obtain a temporary license. And I'm concerned about that because there's no requirement for post-degree residency or internships. And yet there is a way to get to a temporary license from which a person could prescribe and I guess do minor surgical procedures. Should we be concerned about that? So the only requirement in Section 6 is that you have, even if you failed the exam, that you register for the next exam. And so theoretically you could be treating someone and have never passed the NCLEX. Is that accurate?
Representative Prox?
No, I think I might call on a lifeline here for that. Dr. Looper, would you be able to answer that question from...
I'm concerned about that because there's no requirement for post-degree residency or internships. And yet there is a way to get to a temporary license from which a person could prescribe and I guess do minor surgical procedures. Should we be concerned about that? So the only requirement in Section 6 is that you have, even if you failed the exam, that you register for the next exam. And so theoretically you could be treating someone and have never passed the NCLEX.
Never seen that one before. That was that we were talking about the multiverse earlier, and evidently we've invoked the multiverse. Representative Josephson?
Well, I think that was Dr. Looper, and I think he...
No, that was you.
Was the very beginning? That wasn't... wasn't...
I'm confused.
Mr.
Corroborating fully what
you're saying.
And I can't
believe
you made my point.
Dr. Looper, are you there?
I am, actually, yes. I'm sorry, I somehow was muted.
Oh, okay. Could you...
Am I still muted?
No, you're online. Can you put yourself on the record, just state your name, your affiliation?
Hello?
Are you there, Dr. Looper?
I'm here.
Yes, if you could state your name and your affiliation, just put yourself on the record.
My name is Dr. Scott Looper. I'm affiliated with the Alaska Naturopathic Association, and I'm here to answer questions.
Great, thank you. And were you able to hear Representative Josephson's question?
Yes, I did. And honestly, I'm willing to answer the question, but I can't. I was unaware of this. I didn't think that you could practice under a temporary license. This is news to me.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I might...
Representative Josephson?
That strikes me as hugely important, Dr. Looper. The bill says that you can have failed an exam... The current law seems to express concern about having failed exam. We delete that and say we're not concerned about having failed an exam, and you can get a temporary license even though you failed an exam. And it doesn't seem to put any restrictions on then either prescribing or doing minor surgical procedures. Should that be a concern of the committee?
Yes. The answer is yes. I've actually been in the situation. I've trained... 18 residents or first-year doctors in my clinic. One year, I had a resident who we had hired before she had actually passed the exams. You know, we weren't going to have her practice. We just were hoping that she was passed the exam, and she didn't, and she was not able to practice. I'm sorry, I don't know exactly what the law is, but common sense would dictate if you don't pass the exam, you don't get to be a doctor. Now, she eventually did pass the exam. She took it again about 4 months later and ended up passing it and is in practice right now. But between those time periods, she did not practice medicine. She just kind of idled and studied all she did. So that's in reality. I'm sorry I can't answer the legal aspect of this. I wish I could. But the practical aspect is if somebody doesn't pass the test, she shouldn't be able to practice.
Follow up?
There's much I still need to do, Dr. Looper, to study this bill. But I think the main concern I have is this, and it's best asked in this way. If we allowed in law medical doctors and osteopaths to no longer do residencies and not be required to do what the AMA says they're required to do, which is 12,000 to 16,000 hours of internship or residencies, which strikes me as 5 years. Well, this suggests it's 3 to 7 years. So we said, dispense with that. Go practice medicine. Don't do that sort of post-doctoral MD training. What would the public think of that? Would that gain the public's confidence to say, don't do this extra thing that under the bill would not be required of naturopaths?
Representative Josephson, is that question directed to Dr. Looper or okay, Dr. Looper?
That's an excellent question. Let me address it. Naturopathic doctors are trained as primary care providers. That's the mission. That's the objective. Primary care providers are not specialists. They're not trained as specialists. They're not meant to do any kind of specialty stuff. MDs and DOs with their extensive residencies are really trained to be specialists. They're trained to be more than a regular doctor. Now, there are other practitioners in the state that are also trained as primary care providers, nurse practitioners, for example, and they're not required to do residencies, and they're able to practice safely and effectively. This is already being done. in Alaska, in other states where naturopathic doctors can practice up to the full extent of their education, where they're allowed to do minor surgical procedures and they're allowed to do prescriptions, they also practice safely. So it's not that we want to say that naturopathic doctors are going to be equal to MDs and DOs, because they're not. They don't have the training, but they are adequate to the task at hand, which is providing primary care. Again, they're trained to provide primary care. That's objective. And the fact is that their education exceeds that of nurse practitioners. There's more hours, more training, more patient contact, more everything. And likewise, PAs are able to provide primary care, and the training far exceeds what PAs are doing. Simply what the bill is doing is trying to bring the practice, the practice ability, the licensing ability, up to what the level of the education is. Did I answer your question?
Representative Josephson?
Yes. Mr. Chair, just for the record, I know there's a pending bill that would allow PAs to work independently, but right now they can't, so there's that difference. I have a question for the sponsor, if I might.
Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, Representative Prox, in your description, you talked about pharmacology. And one of the things that confuses me is the bill purports to say, and I believe, because the MDs tell me so, that the pharmacology classwork that NDs do is comparable to that MDs do. But then in your statement, you insinuate or imply that the very things that were learned are somehow not, that they're wrong, that they're not to be fully believed. And that, in other words, it's like the NDs are learning pharmacology, but then resisting what they've learned to move in a different direction and be circumspect of the very thing they've learned in terms of the delivery or the efficacy of prescription drugs. Am I reading between the lines, or is that true? And it just strikes me as counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm. Representative Prox.
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Josephson. The practice of naturopathy is different. The other word, I guess, closest description is allopathic medicine. Allopathic medicine focuses more on treating the symptoms of disease or fighting the disease, and naturopathy focuses more on preventing disease in the first place. So, yeah, naturopaths do take a different approach to their practice. But they need to know if a patient comes in, for instance, with high blood pressure, at some point it's an acute problem that needs to be addressed immediately to prevent a stroke or heart attack. And it might be appropriate to prescribe a drug to do just that. But then they would want to then continue on other things that people can do to reduce their blood pressure without medication, relying on medications. And then the other situation is that sometimes people do get prescribed a drug that has adverse effects, and the patient is showing up to the naturopath's office or any doctor's office, and the physician needs to understand the adverse effect of drugs and to see if maybe that is the underlying problem. So they need to be trained to the same level, even though they don't intend to rely on prescription. Does that make sense?
It's helpful. I'll come back to this. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We've got questions from Representative Ortiz, Stapp, and Johnson. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The chair. First of all, could we look at page 8 there, and when we look at the second set of around the where it says allows minor office procedures,
right.
Is that, should we really be saying allows minor surgical procedures? Is that really what we're talking about here in terms of, should the word be surgical procedures rather than office procedures?
Representative Prox.
Thank you. That point well taken. That is the intent of that. And this would be things like perhaps stitching up, cut, removing a mole or whatever, but just more or less the same procedures that a regular general practitioner might perform in office, but it would be unreasonable to think that a naturopath would be more inclined to perform internal procedures, heart transplants or stuff like that, in their office. Or that's an extreme, but that's the idea.
Follow-ups? And so with that, what level within their four-year postgraduate medical degree, what level of training do they receive under a standard program for minor surgical procedures? Is that part of their regular training, that they would have training in minor surgical procedures?
Mr. Nutter?
Through the chair to Representative Ortiz, thank you for the question. They received that training during their four-year doctorate degree, and as far as the courses that pertain to that, either Tim Birdsall might be able to speak better to that.
Would you like? Okay, Mr. Birdsall, if you are online, if you can state your name and your affiliation.
Thank you. This is Dr. Tim Birdsall. I'm a naturopathic doctor licensed in the state of Alaska. I practice at Avante Medical Center in Anchorage. I'm also a member of the Alaska Association of Naturopathic Doctors. The term minor office procedures or office procedures has been used historically in naturopathic licensing as to avoid confusion with major surgery, and major surgery is certainly excluded in the scope of practice in every state that licenses naturopathic doctors, and usually with some additional provisos of other things specifically that are not allowed, even though they might not fall into a general surgery category of surgery involving tendons or ligaments or blood vessels or eyes or things like that that might be done outside of an operating room. The minor procedures in general are things that involve not only a surgical incision or removal of something, as Senator Prox has already mentioned, but they also involve things that don't require incision. The example of stitching up a laceration, as an example, would be something where there's no incision made, but nonetheless a wound is being closed that was the result of an injury, perhaps. So those techniques and skills are in fact included in the curriculum for naturopathic doctors, and it's part of the training that every naturopathic doctor receives.
Follow up.
Thank you for that. When a regular, and I hate to say regular, because I generally believe in what naturopaths are trying to accomplish and how they contribute to medical care. I think that they make a great contribution, and I generally like the idea of prioritizing disease prevention and discovering root causes of illness. That seems really fundamental to me. However, when we talk about licensing or allowing naturopaths to prescribe drugs, what level of training do they get in their four-year postgraduate medical degree for prescribing drugs? It seems to me that when you compare a residency program where a standard medical doctor is under the supervision of other medical doctors, there's quite a bit of training that goes on that is not really a part of the training that happens with a naturopath, because they have no residency program. Training in prescribing drugs, training in surgical procedures, those kinds of things. That's a big part of the residency that's under supervision that's not available to, or that's not a part of the naturopathic doctor. So my question is, tell me more about where they get this training for prescribing drugs in terms of their four-year postgraduate medical degree. Where does that happen?
Mr. Birdsall, Dr. Birdsall?
Thank you, through Chair Foster, to Representative Ortiz, an excellent question. And I think there's a two-part answer to that. Naturopathic doctors do receive extensive training, both didactic training in terms of pharmacology and the understanding of drugs and indications, contraindications, mechanisms of action, and so forth, as well as supervised training during the their 2 years of clinical training in the last 2 years of naturopathic medical school, where they are being supervised and where the utilization of prescription drugs is being seen in a real-world clinical environment, overseen by a naturopathic doctor. The four largest naturopathic medical schools in the U.S. Are located in states that do have broad prescriptive authority, and therefore students are getting excellent hands-on training as well. The second part of the answer, I think, has to do with looking at safety and the history of safety. And the Federation of Naturopathic Medical Regulatory Authorities, which is made up of people from the Departments of Health or Regulation in the states that do license naturopathic doctors, has compiled information, I believe it's included in some of the documentation related to this bill. But looking at states with jurisdictions rather that have broad prescribing rights and the number of disciplinary actions involving prescriptive drugs, either in states that include opioid prescription or states that exclude opioid prescription, and the rates of disciplinary actions, and that includes all actions, all cases, whether there's an actual restriction on a scope of practice or restriction on a license, or whether it is simply a case that is dismissed. The total of only 62 cases among all of those states from 2010 to 2021 that represent nearly 6,000 licensed providers during that 10-11 year period of time. So it's a very low rate of concern, low rate of disciplinary actions being undertaken, which I think underscores the safety that naturopathic doctors have demonstrated. In addition to that, I will say naturopathic doctors do carry malpractice insurance, and our rates for naturopathic doctors from a malpractice standpoint are very low. Some of the lowest malpractice insurance rates of any healthcare providers anywhere in the United States, indicating again that malpractice insurers do not see a risk that is oversized, and that's reflected in our low malpractice premiums.
Follow up.
Appreciate that answer. My final question gets to the whole idea of naturopaths wanting the licensure to prescribe drugs. It seems like it's almost counterintuitive to what your underlying mission is, which is to prioritize disease prevention and discovering root causes. That almost goes against the whole idea of you know, needing or wanting to have the ability to prescribe pharmaceuticals or drugs. That's almost counterintuitive to what your basic mission is. Wouldn't you agree?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, that's an excellent question. And I believe that some of what Representative Prox stated in the initial summary of the bill is reflecting more of a historical view of pharmaceuticals as opposed to a current view. It is the position, I think, of all naturopathic organizations across the country is that there is what we would refer to as a hierarchy of therapeutics, meaning that there is a place for everything. Would we wish that every case of hypertension could be controlled by diet and lifestyle counseling? Yes. But that's not the case. Some cases are going to require more intervention, and that intervention might be an herbal medicine or a dietary change. But when those things don't work, or when the situation with the patient is so acute that prescription medications are necessary, that is included in our philosophy. We don't turn to drugs as the first line of therapy very often, but we do occasionally. Allow me to give you a simple example. I had a patient that presented in my office 10 days ago. She came in with a sore throat, relatively young woman, no recent exposures to things. We did variety of tests in-house to look at, did she have influenza? Did she have COVID? Did she have strep throat? And she turned out to be positive for strep throat. In my opinion, the most appropriate, most naturopathic, appropriately reviewed intervention was for antibiotics. I could not prescribe them. I had to send the patient to a nurse practitioner to prescribe the antibiotics for his strep throat. That resulted in delay, additional costs, which was unnecessary. I know exactly what to prescribe for that. I use the same resources that everybody else uses. If I have any question in my mind or something that I want to refresh myself on, I use resources like UpToDate or other kinds of references to ensure that what I'm doing is compliant. But there's certainly cases where medication is necessary. In addition to that, even if I were to choose not to prescribe anything in my own practice because of philosophical reasons, my patients coming into me will be on drugs. And I need to understand those drugs. I need to understand what they do, how they do what they do, what their indications are, their contraindications, and need to make sure that I'm fully aware of all of that so that if there are things that I'm going to do to help the patient, that I'm doing that in the context of the medications that they're currently taking that have been, even if they've been prescribed by someone else.
Thank you, Dr. Britzall. We're going to do two more questions. I'd also like to recognize we're joined by Representative Tomaszewski, who I believe had a bill hearing earlier, so thanks for joining us. So next up, we've got Representative Stapp and then Co-Chair Johnson. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair to our online naturopathic doctors, I suppose. So some of this, I think, has been really interesting. I'm not really interested in debating the philosophical scope of what a naturopathic is or not. I'd like to focus on the actual merits of the bill and what we're doing. So my first question is, in the event this bill passes, will you have less scope of practice than Montana and Idaho, the same scope of practice as Montana or Idaho, or more scope of practice in Montana or Idaho? That's my first question.
Is that for Dr. Birdsall?
Yeah, or Dr. Looper, either one.
Okay. If either one of you would like to take a shot at that.
So I can take that question.
Thank you.
And who's the speaker?
So this is Dr. Scott Looper. The answer is the same. There are some subtle differences. The prescription rights aren't exactly the same, but really it's much, much more close. The basic answer is they're the same.
So, follow up, Mr. Kutcher.
Follow up.
So the reason I asked the question is because in my appendix on page 3, addendum B, I am looking at this 6,000 licenses estimation and physician acts that directly harm patients. It's a chart of all the data of requirements. So I look at the state of Idaho, and when it says actions for misdiagnosis or failure to use standard care protocols, there have been no complaints against naturopaths. When I look at performing an inadequate procedure that is not in the justification scope of practice, been no complaints against naturopaths in those states either. When I look at inappropriately prescribing drugs, opioids and other drug legends, don't see any complaints against naturopaths either. So I guess my question is, and for all the people who would be concerned, that in the event that you allowed naturopaths a standard scope of practice that is comparable to other states that have been doing this for a long time already, do we think that in Alaska that we will be so dramatically different as the experiences of Montana or Idaho or New Hampshire in the event that we allowed a naturopath to expand their scope of practice? And then I have one last follow-up, Mr. Kocher.
Okay, and Dr. Looper or Dr. Birdsall?
So this is Dr. Looper. Representative Stapp, your question is well put. The answer is it'll be the same. The fact of the matter is naturopathic medicine has been practiced for, 100 years and decades in most of the states we're talking about safely, where there's really very low complaints. You know, there's the occasional problem. Any profession is going to have that. But the rate of problems is much less than other professions, particularly less than the MDs and DOs. And the fact of the matter is the profession the doctors are well trained. They're very conscientiously trained to provide good care to the best of the instructor's ability. We would be glad to bring in experts to testify as to the quality and depth of the education. We've done this before for other hearings. And the fact of the matter is the record speaks for itself. In reality, the practice of naturopathic medicine has been safe and effective. And let me say one more thing, is that there's a very strong need in Alaska for primary care providers. We have a shortage. The frustrating thing is that here in Alaska, we have about 50 doctors that are ready to go to fill in this gap and provide primary care. If only they were allowed to practice like they were trained. That's the real crux of this right here. And the fact of the matter is that they practice safely. They have, and I have full expectations that they would continue to. Thank you.
So, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Kutcher, for fostering my last follow-up into either the naturopath doctors online. Is there's been a lot of comments on as far as training and education background. Is there any material difference between what a naturopathic doctor goes through as far as schooling in the state of Montana or the state of Idaho than there would be in the event that we pass this bill in Alaska? Is there some material difference? Do they all go to the same program? They all do the same thing? Is there any material difference in the training and background of these naturopathic doctors?
This is Dr. Birdsall. I'll take that question. Thank you. Through the chair. To Representative Stapp. There's no difference whatsoever. As I mentioned earlier, there are a limited number of naturopathic medical schools in the country, a total of, I believe, five currently, and they are all accredited by the Council on Naturopathic Medical Education and have essentially the same curriculum and are all eligible for taking the NPLEX national licensing exam. So I would expect that there would be no difference in the training or the level of expertise of doctors licensed in Alaska compared to Washington, Oregon, Montana, Idaho, any of those states that have had licensing laws for some time.
Thank you.
Thank you. And last question, Representative Co-Chair Johnson.
Thank you. I have a couple questions. First of all, this is for the sponsor of the bill. On page 2, section 2, there's an amended item that says adds a naturopathy board. And I guess I was wondering, since we have a number of executive orders to remove boards and consolidate boards, I was wondering if there was any other board that this could go under, perhaps a medical board or some like board, so we aren't adding additional boards.
Representative Fox?
I think Director Robb might be more qualified to answer that than me.
Director Robb, if you can again put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sylvan Robb, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. To Madam Co-Chair, typically we do not have professions. We have one of our regulatory boards that covers a number of different professions, architects, engineers, land surveyors, and landscape architects are all covered by a single board, but typically the boards regulate their own professions, and they are singular. So I don't think that it would be a great fit to put the natural paths under an additional board. The department is interested in seeing a regulatory board, excuse me, an advisory board for the natural paths. It's a very small profession. There are just 56 licensed natural paths in the state, and having a advisory board puts less burden on the practitioners. Additionally, it's a very small group of people and they all know each other, and that can lead to some challenges within the board in terms of trying to regulate the profession just because everyone knows each other. We all know Alaska is a very small state.
Co-Chair Johnson?
Thank you. That answers my question. I do have another question as well. This may be for the sponsor, it may be for one of your persons that you have online. But I was looking through, I guess it's a handout that came frequently asked questions from the Institute of Natural Medicine. And there is this was a handout from, I guess I'm not sure, maybe, well, anyway, I'm reading from this handout, and there's some highlights in this that they list, and one of them, and I kind of like my general thought is that, you know, I'm not really immediately opposed to this, but I also like to I want to have real facts in front of me, and so maybe this is something that I just have as an additional piece of information. But it does say, you know, reduce the incident of illnesses and fatalities caused by hospital errors. So in thinking about that, I guess I want to know how naturopathic doctors do that. I guess when I can remember some of the old timers around saying, well, you know, I don't go to the hospital because people die there. And kind of the same idea. I was just wondering if anybody wanted to elaborate on that.
Representative Fox?
Well, that's a little bit difficult without being critical of the current medical industry. But the kind of a key point of availing yourself of naturopathic medicine as opposed to allopathic medicine is that patients of naturopathic practitioners need to be patient because they don't generally offer an instantaneous solution. And the trouble with the instantaneous solution is it's generally powerful medications, maybe even derivatives of some less powerful herbs and what have you. So when a mistake is made, it's a big mistake, as opposed to the practice of naturopathy is much more cautious, and it's much less likely to get a big mistake. You find something may not work, we got to try something else, but it isn't causing an emergency reaction to a drug. That's my primary reason for choosing naturopathic practice as going to the regular medical institutions.
Mr. Chair, I know we're out of time. But
First of all, Representative Co-Chair Johnson, did you have any further? Okay, thank you. I actually saw Representative Galvin's hand before Representative Josephson's. Are they relatively We do. Okay.
I just have a comment.
Okay. Representative Josephson, comments?
Yes. One of the things we're hearing is that that naturopaths are primary care providers. And I don't think there's any denying that. Other MDs and DOs who are primary care providers are subject to AS 955-540 on the burden of proof in a malpractice action. So this involves standard of practice, scope of practice, and complying with that standard. And I'm going to want to know on this bill why that section, which defines healthcare provider patient relationships, is not melded into this bill. So I think the committee needs to delve into the issue of malpractice within naturopathy and how it views itself and reviews itself in that way.
Great. Thank you. I did open the door, so I want to make sure I'm giving that opportunity to everyone. Representative Galvin, did you have a question?
Thank you, Chair Foster. This has been a very interesting conversation. I'm very supportive of naturopathy. At the same time, I appreciate that there may be two different lanes we're talking about, and because it's related to so much expertise in care that I don't have, what I've done is look through the packet of those who have further expertise, and to me, one of the maybe what's considered gold standard of the MD world, which we know has a lot of oversight and such, the American Medical Association. What I've read was that with regard to curriculum, in terms of what naturopath students are learning. In pharmacology in particular, it says that there are no standards around course content. And that's a concern of mine, not to say that we can't find a way through that, but just the sense that there may not be the same, and maybe this leads to Representative Johnson's thinking about oversight and is there a board that helps where there those within that field have guidelines, I guess, is important to me, and if the maker would like to address that would be helpful. And the other piece that I think is important to note, this is in reference to Dr. Madeiras, who's the executive vice president of the American Medical Association. Another area is that it says that they describe what the training is like, and it goes into great detail, and then it suggests that as a result, there is no guarantee that a naturopathic student will ever see patients who are sick or hospitalized during their clinical rotations. They may also never take care of some of our most vulnerable patients, such as children and senior citizens. So I just bring that up for conversation because, again, I'm not the expert, but when I read that those who have been in the industry for a very long time, and I do appreciate that preventative care is a whole nother ball of wax. It's very important that we have. But this is sort of on the other side saying when there is critical needs that perhaps there isn't the same level of training. And I think about office procedures being surgical procedures. I really appreciated hearing that line of questioning. And again, in listening to the various experts by reading this piece, I've read that it can lead to things like without the proper practice, not noticing that mold that was removed, for example, was cancerous. Or you know, there are lots of stories in here about examples that perhaps lead to more concern that we have maybe not addressed yet. And I open that up to you to, if you'd like to address that.
Representative Brox.
Go ahead, Rana.
Mr. Nye.
Through the chair to Representative Galvin. I just wanted to comment that naturopaths under this bill will be required to take a pharmaceutical examination that's the equivalent of anything offered by the state medical board. And so without the proper training, I would assume they wouldn't be able to pass that exam. But one of our naturopathic doctors may be able to speak better to the actual training that happens in the class and the course content that you're speaking to.
Dr. Looper or Dr. Birdsall?
This is Dr. Birdsall. I'm happy to take that one through the chair to Representative Galvin. Excellent question. In other hearings, we've heard testimony presented by Dr. Clyde Jensen, who's a pharmacologist and also a healthcare administrator. He has served as president of, actually, I think he's the only person, to the best of my knowledge, that has ever served as the president of an allopathic medical school, an osteopathic medical school, and a naturopathic medical school. And in all of those schools, he retained his teaching credentials as a professor of pharmacology. And his testimony regarding HB 115 just a few weeks ago was that, in fact, the curriculum is the same, the textbooks are the same, the information that's presented is the same. So, from one expert's perspective, the training that's received is comparable. In terms of the populations that are seen in care in clinical care, the schools have over the last two or three decades worked very studiously to ensure a broad scope of patient populations, including homeless populations. There are numerous clinics I'm aware of in Seattle and Portland, in San Diego, with the three West Coast naturopathic medical schools, where naturopathic students are seeing homeless populations. Interestingly, the elderly and the pediatric population are very, very well represented in the distribution of patients that are seen in naturopathic training clinics. So I think those populations are well represented, and in fact, students have a considerable access to those patients. The challenge always is how much training is enough, and I think everyone would probably agree that more training is better. And where is the line that we draw to say what is adequate? I think the intent of all licensing laws, and certainly the intent in the state of Alaska, is that we draw the line at safety and ensure the safety of the residents of the state of Alaska, and that no one who is licensed to practice is being licensed in a way that would create the potential for risk or for harm. And again, I would go back to the data from the Federation of Naturopathic Medical Regulatory Authorities to indicate that a very low level of risk, and the malpractice data would also say a very low level of risk when looking at an expanded scope of practice that includes prescriptive authority. So I think that from a safety standpoint, that the proof is actually in the history. Dr. Looper already mentioned naturopathic medicine has been licensed in some states in the U.S. for over 100 years, and there's an extensive history. And we want to make sure that as educational standards change and as medical perspectives change, and there's been a huge upsurge in medical research and our knowledge of medications and patient individuality around particularly all of the genetic components of that have come out since the human genome was unraveled more than a decade ago,
And as those things change, we need to be able to stay, to keep pace with the changes in that by, as Dr. Looper's already indicated, by creating licensing that is roughly equivalent to the training, the education, the experience that naturopathic doctors undergo.
Thank you.
Thank you, and that was Dr. Birdsall. Any closing comments before we close out the meeting, Representative Fox?
Well, thank you, Chair Foster. I think it's important to keep in mind that the choice really should be made at the patient level rather than dictated at the legislative level. And we can write statutes, but we can't guarantee results. And in this case, we were talking about prescriptive drug training versus what you learn, and what you learn.
Your line is muted.
On somewhat.
Your line is unmuted.
On what you're focusing on, you wouldn't be inclined to go to a doctor that specializes in sports medicine for a stomach problem. But they could technically, I think, offer prescriptions for that. And we do have. I do have experience, personal experience, of general practitioners prescribing drugs for depression. And you really should be seeing somebody that specializes in mental health before you do that, I would think. But we can't control that. We don't control that by statute or regulation. We trust the integrity of the medical professionals, and we let the market decide. And I think that should be opened up to the practice of naturopathy as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And so with that, our next scheduled House Finance Committee meeting is today at 1:30. We'll hear the FY25 operating budget closeout reports from the subcommittees for the Department of Transportation, Department of Fish and Game, and the Department of Administration, as well as the Department of Revenue. And so with that, we will be adjourned at 10:28 a.m. Thank you.